You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Just like that, third and final hour of Miller and Moulton along the network. The Diamond District bonus hour awaits for our loyal 239 audience. We are Miller and Moulton, millerandmoulton.com, Miller underscore Moulton on X. Whole lot of madness out there. Bracket Dom in about 35 minutes. How did he do? How many of the 68 did he get? Last year, he was 67 out of 68, and he had every single team within one seeding line of where they ended up being. I'll bet that was not the case yesterday. I don't know how, if anybody was remotely close about some of the seedings that certain teams got, like FAU, Michigan State, Texas A&M, etc. But Bracket Dom in 35 minutes as we assess the damage, I mean the brackets from yesterday. But can I go back to something we started talking about last hour of the NFL?
Absolutely.
So Minnesota gives up 2 seconds, a second this year and a second next year. And then isn't there another pick, like a fourth rounder or something thrown in? I thought it was 3 draft picks, 2 of them twos, 1 this year, 1 next, to move up. And they moved up, what is it, like 20 spots, 19, 20 spots. They moved up from the 10th or 11th pick of the second round to 23rd in the first round. So they now have 11 and 23. Okay. Let's assume the top 3 teams in the draft are not trading. Whether they take quarterbacks or not, or whether New England's going to take Marvin Harrison Jr., let's just assume for now that the top 3 teams are not trading. If you're Arizona at 4, 11 and 23 enough for you?
I don't know what the value, you know, charts right. say.
Oh, no, and I'm just asking your gut feeling. And the reason I ask that is I don't think they have a second-round pick now in this year's draft. So if you want more, I think the best you can do this year is a third rounder. And my guess is Minnesota's going to want to put that off till next year. Well, the problem is you gave up next year's second.
No, I know. Houston. I would love to see those two in something, David. And even right. if it was a third, but then you're telling Minnesota they've got nothing. I mean, you can always ask, but I don't know if the Vikings are all high on moving up or if they think they're going to get the Bo Nix or the Penix at 11 or 23, for that matter.
Or, quite frankly, if McCarthy's going to fall to him at 11. Right. I mean, you don't know if Minnesota did that so they can be positioned for Drake May or McCarthy to fall and get him at 11. Or whether or not at 23 they're pretty confident, yeah, we can get Michael Penix here. We love Penix. Or we love Nix. We can get him here. Not a problem. So just a gut feeling, if you're Arizona, you'd want a little more. That's what you're saying.
I'd right? want a little more. I would.
Okay. Chargers. Now, remember, they were in salary cap. You know what? You know, they traded Keenan Allen. They cut Mike Williams. They've reworked both defensive ends contracts. You know, they don't have a lot of money. And they're in an interesting position. Are they ready to win? Are they going to be ready to win in a year?
They're going to be expected to win. I don't know if they're ready to win, but when you bring in Harbaugh and you have that quarterback, they're going to be expected to win. And I don't mean win the division, but I mean be a winning football team. I think that's a fair ask of the LA Chargers.
11 and 23 enough for you if you're the Chargers?
I think it is.
Okay. Because I'll chime in here. If I'm the Giants, it's enough. I'll tell you that right now. You want to move up to 6? 11 and 23? We can do that deal now. Absolutely. And I think, by the way, we're not far off. And we don't have the whole point Jimmy Johnson points chart, you know, what it is, how many points each pick is, and, you know, add it up. We don't have that. But then again, that's not always followed. And I think, Mark, you've hit right on it. We hit on it with the Giants at 6. We think the Giants would go, oh, hell yeah, done. Arizona at 4, a little more. Think you gotta give us a little more. You wouldn't throw in Jordan Addison, would you? No, didn't think so. All right.
But and what's Denver going to do if four is available? Would they want to, you know?
But see, they don't. Here's the good thing. If you're Minnesota and you're worried about Denver, they don't have a ton of picks. Still, even the picks that they're acquiring here, like Judy and what have you, that was a fifth and a sixth. You know, most of the, they have like a first and a second, and then they don't have anything till the fifth, I think.
Right. It's this year's one and next year's one if it's Denver to move up. I mean, realistically,
right.
that's
right.
The only way they move up is with next year's one.
And most likely Minnesota now is just going to have a tentative deal where if they're wanting to move up, they'll have a tentative deal in place with someone and they'll wait to see whether or not that person's still available for them to move up for. So now it seems pretty obvious that the Vikings are at least going to come away with a quarterback out of this draft. That Sam Darnold is the placeholder, the one-year $10 million placeholder, but that they're going to come out of this draft with their quarterback of the future. That now seems apparent to everybody, right?
100%.
You know, Washington traded away Sam Howell. There's no doubt as to what Washington's doing at number two. You know, the Patriots are still a bit of a mystery. They signed Jacoby Brissett. Is the number three quarterback worth it to them? Does it depend on who it is? If it's Jaden Daniels, they'd be all in. If it's Drake May, they'd be all in. We don't know. And I don't know if we will know before the draft. So we think we've narrowed it down. Minnesota could give up 11 and 23 and move up to the Giants at six with no problem. Probably need to find a little something, something for the effort to get to Arizona at four. Chargers?
Really interesting because of where they are cap-wise, new regime. Do they want to just accumulate some bodies in the first round of what will be a solid draft?
Well, Mark, they just lost their top two wide receivers, and it's an excellent wide receiver draft. So if you're the Chargers or you're going, you know, we could still get one of these two guys at 11, most likely. It's a gamble, though. Wide receiver, you know, we think the top end of this draft is going to be run on quarterbacks, run on wide receivers, run on tackles. So if the run on wide receivers happens, is it going to happen between 5 and 11? And next thing you know, you're the Chargers. You turn around, you go, son of a gun.
So that's how we see the Vikings move, that they're quarterback hunting. It's just whether they move up, stand pat. Part of me thinks they're going to stand pat because they know they can get a Nix or a Penix at 25 or whatever it is.
23. Yep. I think they're moving up.
Four?
I think they've already had the discussions.
And you think they're going to four or five?
Yeah, I do. I think they're going to the Chargers at five. And I think the Giants are like, damn, we'd have taken that deal. But I think if you're the Vikings and you're going for a quarterback, you have to take a look at, so who's most likely to trade out? We got to get above them. And the Giants are a prime candidate to trade out. The Giants are also being now whispered about, you know, they might be enamored with one of these quarterbacks. So if you're the Vikings, you could see where you might have to get ahead of the Giants.
Hell, the Giants weren't even going to give Russell Wilson the starting job. Are we sure the Giants are going to go out and they can make their mind up on a quarterback? I mean, they told Russ that you're going to have to compete for the job if you come here.
Well, I think they told Russ you're going to sign a one-year deal? Okay. You interested in us next year? Because you'll be the starter next year, but we can't do that right now. We got $40 million committed to this Yahoo. That was Dable saying it because the other guy sitting at the table signed him to the contract, Joe Shane. Of course, Joe Shane's looking at the owner going, you made me do this, you know. And now Saquon's an Eagle. Thanks, boss.
Right, and right now they hate Saquon for being an Eagle. But by the week four or week five, they're going to hate me because he's an Eagle.
Right.
They're taking this out on him right now.
Right.
They're going to figure this out sooner or later that it was me. And more importantly, you, but you know what rolls downhill. That's how this works.
Especially when he comes back and has 212 total yards from scrimmage and 3 touchdowns the first time he plays us. But thanks, boss. So just wondering how much you value 11-23. And then making you either Arizona, the Chargers, or the Giants. And let me ask you this, if you're New England, say you're only enamored with 2 of the quarterbacks. Is Marvin Harrison Jr. worth it to not trade down?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he is, David. He's the best player in the draft. I'll start with the receiver if I can't get the quarterback that I want. And who knows, if a Nix or a Penix slip into the early part of the second round, I might be able to grab one there.
Well, it is true. And goodness knows, you'll be in position possibly to trade back into the first round. Hell, for all we know, say the Chargers take the deal and they're at 11-23 and they take whoever at 11. They may trade out at 23. They need cheap labor, man. They got to move off Mac and Bosa soon. Bosa will play this year at 29. Mac will play it at, I think, 33. They need 2 wide receivers. They lost Eckler. I mean, who knows? Maybe Harbaugh's thinking, hell, let's just trade down. I mean, the GM's taking, even though, you know, it's an experienced GM, okay, he's taking orders from Harbaugh. So I found the move fascinating, and I love the fact they did it this early. Yeah, there's no maneuvering here. This isn't Aaron Rodgers, you know, trying to drag things out or what have you. Minnesota said, here you go, 11-23. We're taking a quarterback. We don't know who or where, but we're taking a quarterback.
Right. You in the top 6, be on notice. The Minnesota Vikings are open for business.
Right. Does this interest you? Got enough for you? So, I think it's enough. I don't think they have to add much to it.
Miller and Moulton. Bracket Dom in 25 minutes. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes past the hour, Bracket Dom in a little more than 15 minutes time. Miller and Moulton, MillerandMoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. That's where you can go to vote on our poll question, that Mark Miller, the David Moulton, or Miller_Moulton on X, and vote which one seed loses first. UConn, Houston, Purdue, North Carolina. Vote accordingly. Miller and Moulton both voted for Houston. Obviously, we'll be wrong. And since no one's going to pick UConn, you decide between Purdue or North Carolina. Sound fair?
It might not be. The ones might not lose for a couple of weeks, David.
We've had it before, 2008, right? We had the 4 ones go to the Final Four. Who knows? That's not going to happen. But it could. I know. What was Billis's bracket again?
3 ones and a 2. My kind of bracket, David.
That's what you're supposed to do, actually. I mean, if you want to win your pool, you're supposed to do 2 ones, a 2, and a 3. That's really what you should fill out. Just pick which ones you want to do. So in that case, I think a lot of people this year would pick Kentucky as their 3. And just go, UConn will be one of the ones, and then just, you know, go accordingly elsewhere.
Which 2 do you like the best to make a Final Four? You got Arizona, you've got Iowa State, you've got Marquette, and you've got Tennessee. Tennessee, the highest ranked 2. But we all know Rick Barnes in the tournament. If I were to give you those 4 twos and says only one is going to make the Final Four, which would it be?
See, the problem is I don't have the bracket in front of me, the whole draw thing. But I thought Arizona got a good draw.
They did.
Yeah. I a draw they didn't deserve, to be honest.
They're looking at Nevada or Dayton in the second round, and then they also are in Baylor's side of the bracket. Which Baylor's good, but...
And Alabama, to me, is the weakest four. Because defensively, they're...
Well, Kansas, if they're injured.
Yeah.
But, we really don't know. They're down two starters.
They were for the Big 12 tournament.
Right. So, I don't...
Got whacked by Cincinnati, an NIT school. So...
Yeah, so, Mark, I agree on Bama. It's just Kansas with that caveat of how healthy are they going to be.
And I think Alabama's a candidate to lose in the first round. I think that's a 4-13 looking at it. Alabama ended the season badly.
Well, and David, you did call it on Charleston. You said they're going to – and that's who Bama plays in the first round is a 13.
That's – Mark, we've talked about this for a while. I mean, they played no defense.
No, and CSC can shoot it a little bit.
Yeah, I just – I know Bama can put 100 up on anybody. They could blow Charleston right off the court.
That's what I think could happen because they're so athletic. They can get up and down the court, and I don't know if Charleston can keep up. I mean, they'll have to shoot really well from beyond the arc.
So, can we talk a little golf here?
Sure.
Do you know who had a bad weekend? LIV. Because it's arguably the best players' championship ever. And names at the top of the leaderboard, too. I mean, number one player in the world, Scottie Scheffler. He wins. He does it in dramatic fashion. But Brian Harman won the Open Championship last year, right?
Right.
Okay. And by the way, a little credit. I called it the Open Championship. Okay. I stayed away from how I want to call it.
What do you want to call it, David?
I want to call it the British Open, Mark. It is the British. It will always be the British. Arnold Palmer played and won the British. Jack played and won the British. Hell, when Tiger played it, it was the British. It's the British. If it's the U.S., then it's the British. All right. I digress. But in all seriousness here, and for what it's worth, I actually had a connection with the LIV Tour for like the first 3 weeks of its existence. I was like doing research behind the scenes for the announcers. Off site, if you will. And I had a chance to email with some people fairly high up. And I did say to them, I go, listen, I kind of like the shotgun thing on Friday. This doesn't work on Sunday. It just doesn't. You got to have the leaders all bunched together, and they got to be playing 15, 16, 17, 18 together. Now, if some guy, you know, from way back, like Scheffler, okay, but at least I go, this shotgun thing doesn't work on Sunday. And ultimately, you're trying to get people to watch on television, right? I mean, think about it. If that was an LIV event, Scheffler would have finished on 3. That doesn't work. It doesn't work, Mark. It'll never work.
It'll never work? Won't.
No, it'll never work. I don't think it will. I don't think it will. Also, think about us, the golfer, even though I don't play anymore. Okay, think about us, the golfer. We tee off at 1 or 10. We finish on 18 or 9. I just don't think it'll work. And I don't think it'll ever work for television. I'm okay with the shorts. I'm okay with the shotgun starts on Fridays. Hell, even do it on Saturdays. Whatever. I'm okay with the music. I honestly don't care. But Sundays, come on, man. I need to see the leaders group together. Playing together.
I think you can do that and still have a shotgun start.
Okay.
I do. I don't think the shotgun starts as big of a deal as you do because I know exactly when this sucker should end. And I don't need to have, I mean, I did like the very little LIV golf I've watched on TV. I like they, you know, 3 to play, 2 to play. Everybody's got the same number of holes left.
Okay.
It's different. I get it. It's very different.
I think at the very least, though, they need to like, you know, I don't know, reseed, if you will. But if you think about it, if that was an LIV event, Scheffler would have finished on 3. Also, Harmon would have finished on 1, right?
Yeah.
And then Shoffley and Clark would have finished on 18.
Right.
I just don't know if that works. Maybe it does. I don't know. To me, I thought, and, you know, heading into the weekend, the PGA Tour was taking a bunch of shots. I mean, did you hear what Rahm said on Friday? A funny line. Good line. He was asked about the Players' Championship, and he said, well, it's the sum of the Players' Championship.
It's a good line.
That's a good line.
Then they not only have a great play. I mean, the scores were low. Guys went low.
Not much wind. And it's been a cold, wet winter. Remember, we had J.P. Shadrick and Ron Cyrak, who both said, unless the wind picks up, the course is going to play easier, not as crusty. Yeah. I mean, we had 64s on Thursday and Sunday.
But at the same time, they went 2.5 hours without a birdie on 17. And then all of a sudden, the final group throws two darts in there. No one had come close to the hole all day, and these guys have to make two, and they are showing that they can tuck one in there tight.
Was yesterday Xander Schauffele's career so far in a nutshell?
David, you made a comment on Friday, and I don't remember if it was on air or off air, in which you said, is Xander Schauffele this generation's Matt Kuchar? And I'm like, boy, that's you. And Matt Kuchar's.
Because I picked him to win.
Matt Kuchar's a really good golfer. He doesn't win tournaments. He cashes all kinds of checks.
Unbelievable cashing checks. Yes, yeah, 7 career wins, I think, for Matt Kuchar.
A lot of top tens. A lot of top 20s.
Three in a major. One top three in a major. Right. I think Schauffele will have more top finishes in a major. He's already had them. But man, he can't close.
And as well as he scrambled for the week, he's got to get up and down. He doesn't come within 50. You know, it was a ridiculous chip that he had on, 14 or 15 there. It was very hard. But they show the graphic that he's 16, 18 scrambling, and that, you know, he leaves himself a 20-foot putt.
Also, when does he make his first bogeys of the day? One-shot lead with an hour to play. Huh. Interesting. Sure, it's just a coincidence. Kind of like Nebraska and A&M paired up against one another in the brackets. Bracket Dom is next.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
22 minutes till the top of the hour. Final segment along the network. The Diamond District bonus hour for the 239 is at the top of the hour. Bracket Dom, kind enough to join us once again, a bracketologist at Bracketometry.com. Bracketometry.com. Follow him on X. What else would Bracket Dom be known as except Bracket Dom, D-O-M. Dom, it's David and Mark once again. How are you? Man, that was a really good intro.
He's there.
Bracket Dom, how are you?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you now.
Oh, okay, perfect. Sorry about that.
No problem. Hey, first off, how'd you do?
I'll call Dom back.
We got a really bad connection with Dom there. Every time he talked, it kind of broke up. So, good intro.
I thought it was. I got to admit. I mean, some intros are better than others. I will say, like the sportscaster's jinx, so-and-so at 23 for his last 23 for the free throw line. Well, you know what's going to happen. All right? More times than not when we have phone troubles, I have a good intro. How many times have we had phone difficulties after a bad intro?
Very rarely. And that's a damn good point, that your good intro usually leads to telephone abyss.
Right. So should I start mailing in the intros?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Bracket Dom back. He's joining us. Dom, thanks. How'd you do?
Oh, I did well. Not as good as previous years, but that seemed to be the case across the board with all bracketologists, especially just because of the seeding of the Mountain West, which no one expected all those teams to be as low as they were.
And the seedings on the whole, I mean, were a little, to me, screwed up. I mean, they, you know, Michigan State had no business being a 9. FAU, no business being an 8. There were a lot of seedings that left me scratching my head. How about you, Dom?
Absolutely. And I think two of the big things was clearly this committee was not punishing you for having bad losses. I mean, FAU had some really bad losses. Texas A&M had a bunch of bad losses. But they had some good wins, and they still seeded them pretty high. In the past, the committee has kind of preferred a clean resume. This year, they're saying, hey, take all the bad losses that you want. If you get the good wins to balance them out, that's what we're going to reward them for. So a bit of a change from the past there.
All right. Well, if you let's just say you were an advisor either to a conference. Like, I'm sure the Big East right now is trying to figure out the method to the madness. If you were an advisor to a program or a conference, what is it that you would take from this year's committee going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, one, you do need to play a good out-of-conference schedule, but you don't need to play a great out-of-conference schedule to where you're going to lose a bunch of games. I think the best bet is if out-of-conference you play a bunch of kind of middle-of-the-pack teams that will beef up that non-conference strength of schedule, but that you should still handily beat. Just kind of a whole bunch of, like, maybe good mid-majors or mid-tier high majors. Stack all of those up on the resume, and you should be putting yourself in a good spot.
The other side of it is if you are a mid-major, it's difficult. We know this, Dom, to schedule, and they didn't give a lot of benefit of the doubt. You know, Indiana State had the best net ever to not get in the tournament. Well, no one's playing these teams. It's very difficult for you to get the scheduling that you need to get into the tournament.
Exactly, yeah. And that's just not completely fair to them. I mean, I get it. They just didn't really have any quality wins to get themselves in. But at the same time, if they played more good teams, they might have won some of those games. So it really is hard to evaluate a team like Indiana State against one of these teams that's just played in a 20-game power conference schedule.
Is the net the gospel, or because of Indiana State and St. John's, we shouldn't pay attention to it? How seriously should we be taking the net or KenPom heading into next season?
So I would say for the net, and this has still been kind of consistent for the last few years, a team's actual net really doesn't matter. What matters is they use the net kind of to sort your wins and losses. So it really matters a lot more what the nets of the teams you're playing are than what your actual net is yourself. And KenPom is definitely something that they use, but it seems like it's used a lot more for seeding than selection. A good KenPom's not going to get you in, but if you do sneak in, if you have a good KenPom, they're probably going to bump you up a seed line or two from where you should have been.
Well, we have a very simple poll question today that I'm going to ask you. What one seed, in your opinion, gets bounced first?
Ooh, I think that has to be North Carolina. Nothing against them, just that's a pretty stacked region they have there, and I think they were the clear fourth one seed. The other three year just have been dominant, the clear one seeds all year long. But if I had to go out on a limb, I'd say it could potentially be Connecticut too. That they might be my pick to win it all, but Auburn is really good for a four seed, and that might have been my national championship pick, UConn-Auburn there, if they weren't playing each other in the Sweet 16.
I mean, I will say FAU has been maddeningly inconsistent, but in theory, to play FAU in the second round and then Auburn in the Sweet 16 and then Iowa State in a region final, that is not an easy draw.
Not at all. Yeah, I mean, if any other one seed was where Connecticut was, I would say they're for sure the most likely to get bounced. I still can't say UConn just because of how good I think they are, but they got the toughest draw for a one seed, I think.
Who do you think got the easiest draw for the ones?
That's a good question. I think the other three regions, honestly, in my opinion, were all fairly balanced. I just think that one particular region had a lot. I mean, if you look at it, was all the conference champions, Connecticut, Iowa State, Illinois, Auburn, and they're all in the same spot. I think the other regions were pretty reasonably balanced, but that one is just absolutely loaded with good teams that are playing some of their best ball right now.
The committee said that five bids were stolen / lost from Friday through Sunday. How many of your teams that you had in 72 hours ago, did you go, okay, they're out?
Yeah, no. Now, I personally only thought four bids were stolen. New Mexico was their fifth bid thief, and I'm glad they won that championship game because I think I would have had New Mexico in even had they lost that one. So that saved me some points there. Even if you count the other four bid thieves, when you look at that screen and see those teams that popped up as the first four out during the selection show, all four of them reasonably could have been in and would have been in if it weren't for all the upsets in the conference tournament.
You got a 5-12 you like more than most. They stuck a lot of mid-majors against mid-majors in 5-12, which gets Miller and Moulton hot because it just doesn't seem fair. But yeah, is there a 5-12 that you got your eye on?
Yeah, I'm looking at Grand Canyon to take down St. Mary's. St. Mary's was not very good out of conference and then got to the WCC and just started rolling teams. But I think it was a bit of a down year for the WCC besides those top two teams. And Grand Canyon's been good all season long. I mean, they beat San Diego State, who crushed St. Mary's. I know transitive property doesn't always work, but I think that's a pretty evenly matched game, and Grand Canyon might even have the edge, in my opinion.
Of the three Big East teams that were left out, which one had the best argument?
I would personally say I thought St. John's was going to be the closest, but that was me kind of thinking the committee was going to get it wrong. Personally, I think Seton Hall had the best argument. So at least the committee was right in having them as the one in the first four out. Given the fact that they're all the bid thieves, it stinks for the Big East, but I totally get how they only ended up with three. It was very top-heavy. But I do think Seton Hall probably had the best resume, in my opinion. So it was good to see that they would have been the one to get in without all the bid thieves.
You already mentioned Auburn, a team that's a seeded four or worse that you think can make a deep run in this tournament.
Absolutely. I'm looking at down in the region with Purdue, where we have Kansas and Gonzaga playing each other. I mean, Gonzaga never gets the job done at the end, but they always go on runs. You can never count them out. And then Kansas on the flip side, if they get through that, if they're healthy, they would be way higher than a four seed themselves. I mean, they've dealt with so many injuries down the stretch, and they've said they're going to be healthy for the tournament. And if that's really true, then I think they get past Gonzaga and can give Purdue a real test. So I would say whoever comes out of that Gonzaga-Kansas game could be a tough matchup for the Boilermakers.
Talking the brackets with who else but Bracket Dom of Bracketometry.com, Bracketometry.com. Follow him on X at Bracket Dom. All right, don't have to tell you, you do this for a living. But we've had two 16s win in the last 5 years. We've had three 15s get to the Sweet 16, one to the Elite Eight. You know what I'm getting at here? You know, we always pick the 5-12 upsets. But now we have to start looking at 13s, 14s, 15s, and 16s and go, any one of these got a draw or capable of?
See, one of those really low seeds that I would be worried about potentially pulling an upset would be Western Kentucky over Marquette. Just because Marquette has not really looked quite like the same team without Kolek. And I'm not sure if he's going to be back or if he is going to be at 100% for the dance. If he comes back and he's trying to play through an injury, a little banged up, that's just ripe for one of those mid-majors to come in and pull an upset.
Boy, everybody's sleeping on Marquette this year, and I thought they had a pretty good Big East tournament. But I know where you're coming from. If he's not back from the injury, they are a different team, but they did make it to the Big East final against UConn, so that will be interesting to say the very least in that one. NC State, it was a fun ride watching them win the ACC tournament. They got the big fella who can get things done. Is that a favorable draw against Texas Tech?
I think they actually match up pretty well with them. I mean, Texas Tech is a very good team and it's still going to be rightfully favored, but there's no single place where Texas Tech has like a huge matchup advantage that they can take advantage of NC State. So I think they should be able to compete in that game, and it's just going to come down if they can make their shots or not. So, yeah, I wouldn't say it's a super favorable draw to where I actually are going to pick them to pick the upset, but there's no reason that if they don't keep playing like they have been, they can't pull the upset.
Dom, do you think the seeding was so messed up this year because, well, the conferences have gotten so big There were two conferences that got eight teams in, two others with six. That, and they don't want any of those schools playing each other in the first week, and they really try to not have them play each other until the Elite Eight. Do you think that's why now the seedings are as convoluted as they are? Because, well, these conferences have gotten so big, and we don't want them playing each other early in the tournament.
I think that was part of it. But, again, I mean, when I had my seed list and was building a bracket, I was still able to separate those teams accordingly, according to their bylaws of how much you have to separate those teams without getting the seedings off by quite as much as I think they did. So that's certainly a small part of it, but I don't think that's a reasonable excuse for them getting some teams as far off as they did.
Gut feeling, pick one, either a team that you think just got, wow, what an awful draw, or a team in which you go, wow, they got a good draw.
I mean, right out of the gate, one team I'll just say got a bad draw because they have to play an extra game is Boise State. It's not a bad matchup against Colorado, but it's a bad draw when you have to play an extra game when you had no reason to be playing an extra game. I was absolutely stunned that they were in a play-in. I thought they were very safe from it, at least in an 8-9, maybe even up to a 7. If you watch them during the selection show, when their name got called, they didn't even cheer. They just gasped. None of them thought they were going to be in it either. It was definitely a shock.
Colorado, Boise State, a pair of 10s in the South region, the winner to play the Gators on Friday. Dom, thanks for making time for us. We appreciate it. All the best.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Bracketometry with Bracket Dom. Follow him on X at Bracket Dom.
Someone texted in about the Gators. We just said they play the winner of a play-in game. You could take that either way. Do they play a team that has a win under their belt and comes in a little hot, or are they playing a team that had to play and travel? Then they get the winner of the Marquette-Western Kentucky game. You heard Bracket Dom talk about Western Kentucky. If you might have heard David Moulton jump out of his chair when he heard Western Kentucky, because he made those same sentiments earlier in the show today.
It's a fascinating matchup. Marquette plays slow. Western Kentucky, nobody plays faster. I do think if the Gators can win the first game, they'll go to the Sweet 16. I love the Gators in the second round. Little worried about the Colorado-Boise State winner, because it's a better team than I thought they were going to be playing in the first round. I thought they were going to be in a 6-11. They're getting a 7-10.
And then on the other side, it looks like Kentucky would be there, where that would be in an Elite Eight game, should they keep on keeping on. Kentucky, the 3 seed, that is right above them. The Diamond District Bonus Hour, that's next. Thanks so much for listening to Miller and Moulton.